This is Strange Harbor.
The evidence is overwhelming that what we were taught in school about ancient human civilization, particularly about the ancient Egyptians, is far from accurate. Specifically, that our true history was once far older and advanced than we ever thought possible. And the most recent scientific evidence further demonstrates that the Great Pyramid of Giza, Egypt, was not a tomb built for the pharaohs, but is literally a massive technological structure that is beyond our current understanding. You may have seen the news articles that reported on a recent study published in the Journal of Applied Physics, which showed that the Great Pyramid can concentrate electromagnetic energy inside of its internal chambers, as well as under its base and inside the subterranean chamber. Because of this discovery, which was based off calculations of the pyramid, we are able to advance nanosensor technology. So it just so happens that the largest and most mysterious structure ever built, done with extreme precision which mimics modern day laser cut technology, and they say that they did this with chisels and bronze saws. Those proposed methods have long been since debunked. Did you know that the location of the Great Pyramid of Giza, Egypt, just so happens to be the location that they were going to choose to be the prime meridian? It's funny how they never mentioned that not one single mummy was ever found in any of these pyramids ever. We don't even mention that in school for some reason. The most mysterious structure in the history of mankind just so happens to be located on this one unique spot. And here's another fact to add on top of that. The Great Pyramid faces true north almost perfectly. In fact, down to a fraction of 1 degree of accuracy. It just so happens that they are able to focus and concentrate on electromagnetic energy, which they are saying is going to help us advance our modern technology. Is it possible that the Great Pyramid of Giza was a power plant that somehow operated on the same premise that Nikola Tesla had theorized? I think that it's possible, indeed probable, that we are a species with amnesia, that we've lost the record of our story going back thousands of years before so-called history began. And I think if we could go back to that dark epoch, we would discover many astounding things about ourselves.
Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We talk about UFOs and alien abduction. We talk about conspiracy theories, Sasquatch, Dogman, near-death experience, all sorts of fun stuff. I'm Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Cherie DeSeuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
And our guest today is a certified hypnotherapist specializing in experiencer therapy, Miss Gwen Farrell. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Gwen, you have a long history of working with experiencers in your practice, as well as with MUFON through the Experiencer Resource Team. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, the Experiencer Resource Team is a part of MUFON that was developed about 10 years ago, or perhaps a little bit less than that, to reach out to experiencers. MUFON has been around for many, many years. It is still the oldest volunteer organization for investigating UFOs in the country, or actually in the world. And about 10 years ago or so, they decided that they needed to branch out because more and more people were coming forward and wanting to talk about and report their personal contact experiences with ETs and interdimensional beings. And so they established what is today the Experiencer Resource Team. It went through a couple of permutations over the years, but it is the ERT today. And I am happy to be the new director. Our previous director, Kathleen Martin, recently retired, and I'm attempting to step into her very large shoes, but I'm real happy to do it.
Congratulations.
And as the ERT, we do work with experiencers, people who come through the MUFON website into our into us, and we talk to them, counsel them, and try to help them as best we can.
That's wonderful. I am a new ERT team member, and just sort of working through my beginner apprenticeship. And you have been held high by Kathleen Martin for quite some time. So I'm very, very happy to see that you're the new director. And I know it, we're just going to have a fabulous future with you.
Well, I hope so. And I'm glad to have you on board, too. It's an amazing group, and we've grown a lot. When I started in 2006, I think we only had about 30 people at that time. Now we have 50 or close to 50. So we're really glad to have you with us. It is a service that we provide that requires a particular type of individual, someone who has a particular knowledge, understanding, patience, and not everybody is able to really do that job. In order to be accepted and serve on the Experiencer Resource Team, you must be a full-fledged field investigator, a MUFON field investigator, and that requires special training and a lot of skill for that too. But in addition to that, if you want to serve on the ERT, which is what Cherie and I do, you have to have more. So it requires more knowledge, more experience, and it's a very, very special group of people. We take it very seriously because we have individuals who contact us who are having life-changing events happen to them. And they often don't know where to go, and they can't talk to anyone else.
Yeah.
So it's a privilege to be a part of that group, and it's wonderful that MUFON, you know, sees the need for that.
It is something that you really have to do from the heart and have experience on top of that. it is an honor. It's a complete honor. Do we have hoaxsters that try to approach our program?
Hoaxsters?
You know, people who say they've had some kind of experience, and after you speak to them, they really haven't had that experience?
Yes, we do. We do sometimes get people who fill out the questionnaire, send it through MUFON, and then we contact them. We contact and talk to everyone who, you know, who reaches out to us. And, yeah, occasionally we have had people who we believe were probably just hoaxing us.
Yeah.
You know, for a joke, or they were just trying to find out what was going to happen. But yes, we do. But by and large, no. Everybody who comes to us is serious. Now, there's a lot of variation in that. Some people are very traumatized by their experiences. Some people are okay with it, and they just want to share. They want more information about it. They want to, you know, perhaps to talk to a therapist in their area, and we can hook them up with someone usually, or a group that they can contact. So it's pretty much all over the place, which is one reason that you need to be accustomed to working with individuals,
mm-hmm.
because you never really know what you're going to run into.
So how would someone who's had an experience contact MUFON and fill out that questionnaire?
What they need to do is go on to the MUFON website, which is MUFON.com, and on the first page, if they scroll down, they will see a place where they can click if they would like to talk to someone about their experiences. A questionnaire will come up, the questionnaire that we use for everyone. It's our standard questionnaire. They fill it out, hit the submit button, and it comes right to us. And then it is distributed by our assistant director, who sends it to the ERT members who he feels are appropriate for it, and also who are in the same area of the country. He tries to keep that matched up as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's how they reach us.
Well, to change the subject, you have written a book called Forbidden Questions, A Guide to Human ET Contact.
Right.
I would love to hear, you know, what these forbidden questions are and what people would read when they purchase your book.
Well, the book Forbidden Questions is based on questions that experiencers or other people have asked me over the years. I've been doing this work as a therapist in private practice and doing groups for about 12 years. And so it's just different questions that people have asked me about their experiences. And it has been called a mini encyclopedia of the human ET contact phenomenon because it touches on every aspect of human ET contact. It's a light, easy to read book. It's not done in technical language. There's no conspiracy theories involved in it. There's no high tech or extraterrestrial tech involved in it. I don't talk about propulsion systems and how ET craft are built and how they work. This is strictly about contact, human contact with extraterrestrial and interdimensional beings. And there are, I have 34 chapters, and each one is a different question. And some of the questions are, I'm not going to read them all to you, but some of them are, first of all, one of the most important ones is, what is an experiencer?
Mm.
You know, someone's like, well, I think I might be an experiencer, but I'm not sure. How will I know? So opening chapter of the book is, what is an experiencer? It goes on to why are ETs here? Why me? Why are they contacting me instead of somebody else? Did my contact experiences really happen, or did I just dream it, or am I crazy? There are, oh my goodness, let's see some more here. I write a chapter on implants. What are implants?
Mm.
Are all contacts like mine, or are there different kinds of contacts? Yes, there are. Why don't I remember my contact experiences? Most people don't remember their experiences, at least not in full. And why is that? So that's what I talk about in the book.
Wow.
Do ETs really heal humans? And can human beings heal ETs? I have Rh negative blood. Does that mean that I'm part ET? That's the chapter. I think I might be a human-alien hybrid. How do I know? It's another chapter.
Wow.
And then I have a couple of unusual ones like, do ETs have a sense of humor? That's something that you don't talk about very much, but there are reports of humorous events taking place during contact, even abductions. So I write about that, too. And it just goes on and on. How does ET contact change lives? Contact with extraterrestrials always changes the experiencer.
Right.
It is impossible for a human to have contact with one of those beings without being changed in some way. So how are they changed? What are the things that change in people because of that? How can I communicate with ETs? If I want to try, how do I do that? And it goes on, how can I stop ETs from taking me? Can ETs control my mind? I talk about USOs, which are unidentified submerged objects, which are very unusual, but they are around. And a lot of other things, love and sex with aliens, because some people report having romantic relationships with aliens, and certainly and some sexual relationships. So basically, those are just some of the few of all the ones. Like I said, it covers pretty much everything.
If I wanted to get your book and I wanted to get it signed, are you set up for that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
If I wanted to get a signed book,
yes.
Forbidden Questions, how would someone go about doing that?
Well, what they would have to do, I don't sell the book on my own. It's on Amazon. So what they would have to do to get a signed copy is just mail it to me. I'll sign it and send it back. But anyone who's going to be at the MUFON Symposium in August, I will be there with my books. So they would be able to get a signed copy there.
Oh, that's where I'll get my copy.
Yeah, you'll get one. So, yeah, the book is available on Amazon. And, you know, it's pretty easy to get that way. So.
Oh, that's terrific. I know this book is just going to be wonderful. You know, I didn't know there was an Academy of Clinical Close Encounter Therapists.
Right.
And you are on the board of directors.
I was, yes. I was the secretary, actually, secretary treasurer on the board of directors. The ACCET, A-C-C-E-T, dissolved a couple of years ago, but it had been around for about 20 years before I even got involved with it.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so I was on it for about 2 years, and then we dissolved it for, just for business reasons. And so it does not exist anymore.
Do you think with the coming disclosure of the United States and some of the new interest of the media, et cetera, and human beings on Earth, that organizations like this will start to appear again because of the great interest?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, this disclosure, if it really happens, is going to require more than just disclosure from our government and the world governments. It's really going to require disclosure from the ETs as well, before we really know and understand what this whole thing is about. And there's no way of knowing how people are going to accept it. Certainly, all of the hype that there has been, and about this report that's supposed to come out today, I think, or tomorrow from the government, people are eagerly awaiting that. I have been in this field for a long time, and I tend to be an optimist by nature, but I'm not really sure what's going to happen with this report. I tend to think that maybe it's still not going to be the whole truth.
Mm.
And so we'll just have to see how it comes out. But there's no way that we can know. You know, some people are saying the churches are going to, there aren't, nobody's going to go to church anymore. People are going to freak out. They're going to all, you know, go into hiding somewhere. It's going to be, our economies are going to break down, all of that. I don't think that's probably going to happen because I know human beings.
Right.
And I know especially Americans. And, you know, how we keep going on, whatever happens. And I don't think it's going to be that serious, but it'll be interesting. It will be very interesting. Something that I also find interesting is that those of us in this field, even if you haven't been a MUFON member or you're not a MUFON member or you haven't been on the ERT very long, all of us who are interested in this field and have been following it and studying it for many years, we've all sort of seen things like this happen before.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen what we call false flags. We have seen people do things that show up in the news, and we think, okay, now it's over. Now it's been done. It's going to be accepted, and it doesn't. It, you know, it just gets shoved into the closet somewhere. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. Of course, I'm looking forward to it.
Most of the, yeah, me too, and I agree with you that human beings overall seem to be very accepting. They've been seeing it in, you know, every part of the world for centuries. I mean, mm-hmm. for governments to come out and say, oh, I think we know what it is now. Everybody else who's been seeing these objects and these aliens and these orbs and everything else that's out there already know they exist, and no one's mm-hmm. been harmed. You know, yeah, there's been, you know, people taken, some never came back, but we don't know if that's choice and they enjoy space travel, or, you know, there was an accident or whatever. But overall, it just seems that people are very accepting because they've been seeing it for centuries.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you if you're a study at all, a student of human behavior, then you know you have to understand that we're much more resilient than our governments tend to believe that we are,
or pretend to believe we
yes.
are. Yeah, for their own sake, and that just, you know, when people are coming out of the walls and, you know, they're starting to retire and they're going like, I don't care, you know, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say what I saw in 1962.
Uh-huh.
We're seeing more and more of that now.
Yes, yes. And another concern that I have is all of the stuff that's being talked about and the report today, I want to see in that report if anything is talked about human contact,
mm-hmm.
human ET contact, because so far everything's just nuts and bolts.
Yeah, the ship.
You know, it's just craft in the sky, and that is something in MUFON that we have been working on for 50 years. So I hope that there is some mention, something about the human aspect here, because it is my belief that there wouldn't even be anything if it wasn't for the human contact experience.
Right.
So
right.
That is the important thing.
This MUFON conference that's going to take place in Las Vegas, if anybody wants to try to make that, it's in August. You just check the MUFON.com, and it'll tell you how to get there and how to participate. Even from your armchair, I guess you can see it on the screen at home live.
Yes, it's going to be streamed. They're going to have live streaming, so you will be able to. And you don't have to be a MUFON member to come to the MUFON Symposium. Mm-hmm. It's open to general public, and there are going to be some really interesting speakers that are right on the money on what's happening in our world today. There also are going to be experiencer groups, meetings, and workshops for experiencers who are there. And so you can hear some great speakers. You can attend a couple of group meetings if you would like. There's going to be a film festival also. So there's a lot that will be happening that weekend.
Well, I'm going to be there, and I know you're going to be there, and it's going to be quite a life-changing event for me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, if there, how can I put this? What do you see in your practice when you talk to experiencers? Are they just very different individual people that have very different experiences? Or are you seeing like more come through? Experiencers lately, what are you seeing in your practice?
What I've found over the years is that most experiencers are just normal people. They don't look weird. They don't act weird. They're just normal people like the rest of us, making a living and having families and doing the things that normal people do. What makes them different is they have this weird, strange experience that happens to them. Most of them have no idea why it happened. They don't understand it. And so it's some people say, oh, I would love to be an experiencer. I wish that I could, be abducted or have contact with ETs. And some of those kind of things can be good. The majority of them are just kind of a burden to deal with. And even if they're good experiences, still, how do you deal with somebody who comes into your bedroom at night and, grabs you and takes you through the ceiling to another location?
Mm-hmm.
And then puts you back, and then you wake up in the morning and you don't know what happened. It's a difficult position to be in. So these people deal with it. Most of these people, they know something happened. Some of them do understand. Most of them don't, but they know that something happened that is not normal, and they either choose to deal with it or not. So they're really special people. They're very unusual people, and I don't know that I would want to be one of them. I am, but I don't know that I would have chosen to do that. So I hope that answered your question.
We got more with Gwen coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
We have this mental image that a flying saucer will circle the White House lawn, land on the White House lawn, and give us a bounty of all sorts of technological goodies to initiate an age of Aquarius on the planet Earth. Personally, I don't think that's not going to happen. For example, if you're in the forest, do you go out and talk to the squirrels and the deer? Maybe you do for a while. But after a while, you get bored because they don't talk back to you. Because they have nothing interesting to tell you. Because they can't relate to our values and our ideas. If you go down to an anthill, you go down to the ants and say, I bring you trinkets. Take me to your ant queen. I give you nuclear energy. So I think for the most part, the aliens are probably not going to be interested in us because we're so arrogant to believe that we have something to offer them. Realize that they could be thousands, maybe millions of years ahead of us in technology, and they may have, well, no interest in interacting with us in the same way that we don't necessarily want to deal with the squirrels and the deer in the forest. Now, some people say that we should not try to make contact with them because they could be potentially dangerous. For the most part, I think they're going to be peaceful because they'll be thousands of years ahead of us, but we cannot take the chance. So I personally believe that we should not try to advertise our existence to alien life in outer space because of the fact that we don't know their intentions. Then the other question is, what happens if they're evil? Well, I think the question of evil is actually a relative question because the real danger to a deer in the forest is not the hunter with a gigantic rifle. The main danger to a deer in the forest is the developer, the guy with blueprints, the guy with a slide rule and calculator, the guy that's going to pave the forest and perhaps destroy whole ecosystems. The aliens don't have to be evil in order to be dangerous to us. They might not care and in the process pave us over. In fact, if you read the novel War of the Worlds, the Martians in H.G. Wells' seminal novel were not evil in the sense they wanted to torture us. We were just in the way. And so I think that is a potential problem. We could be in the way of a very advanced civilization that simply is not evil, but simply views us as we would view squirrels and deer in the forest. So personally, I think that we should not advertise our existence when we go into outer space. For the most part, however, I do think they are going to be peaceful. They're not going to want to plunder the Earth because there are plenty of planets out there that have nobody on them that they can plunder at will without having to worry about restive natives called humanity.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. Thanks for being with us today. Our guest, hypnotherapist Gwen Farrell. You know, Gwen, I've been thinking about this. We apparently don't have personal rights in the eyes of these aliens, ETs, whoever's abducting us in UFOs and taking us and probing us. It seems as though we don't have rights on a universal level. If I was to come to your bedroom and just snatch you up and take you somewhere else, you would call the cops and I would be charged with kidnapping and imprisonment and stuff. So obviously on a universal level, none of that stuff matters, right?
Well, apparently, that's what it is. Whether it is what I would call universal, or if it just depends upon the race or the group of beings who are doing it. It's very difficult not to feel like you have no power, because these things do happen. People, as I said before, deal with them in different ways, but you can go to the police, but that's not going to do you any good. What we try to do is learn from the experiencers who have been in contact. And they tell us what they know. They tell us what they have been told by those other beings about why the beings are here, what they're doing. There is no one truth, though, that we can say, this is why they do that. But yes, apparently they don't regard us as being perhaps on their level. They think that perhaps they're not hurting us or that there's nothing wrong with what they're doing. Those are things that we have heard that have been told to people by ETs. Well, we don't really mean to hurt you. We didn't know we were hurting you. You know, you're not the same as us, but you're absolutely right. And this is why it's so important for experiencers to have someone they can talk to, because it can be really hard. I mean, nobody wants to feel like a victim or to try to go to sleep at night and you can't sleep because you're afraid somebody's going to come get you. This is a reality for many, many, many hundreds and probably thousands of people in our world. Is it right? No, it's not right for us to be treated this way. But does it happen? Yes, it does.
The main danger to a deer in the forest is the developer.
And we are trying to, in the ERT and through my therapy practice and other people who do this work, trying to just do the best we can to help and to understand.
We kind of do the same thing to to other animals here on the planet, don't we?
Yes, we do. Well, of course we do. You know, and so there are people who believe that the ETs think of us as one big laboratory down here, and that, you know, we're just expendable. They can do whatever we want. They study us. They use us. They hybridize us. They teach us how to fly spaceships. They do all kinds of weird things to us. They have sex with us. And they don't care because they think they can use us. And maybe that's how they feel. I think that there are some of the races who've been in contact with us who do believe that. However, I should say that within the last 10 years or so, we're having fewer and fewer reports of that kind. And I mentioned this in the book. It's like, what's making the change? Are the ETs changing, or are we the ones who are somehow changing? We don't have as many of those experiences reported. Most of the individuals who would come to me in my practice with traumatic experiences would be from when they were younger or years past. Not that it still doesn't happen, but it's not nearly like it used to be. So there seems to be a change. Maybe it's the ETs who used to come and grab us and do nasty things to us aren't here anymore. Or maybe they just realized they couldn't get out of us what they wanted to if they grabbed us. So maybe it's time to be nicer and try a different connection. But we do know that psychic and spiritual contacts are on the rise with contactees. I do believe that there are changes that are happening to the human race. I have to try to remember that change in humanity moves on like a glacial pace. We don't evolve quickly at all. Evolution takes a long, long time. But I think if you look at our young people, what we used to call indigo children, I don't think they're called that much anymore. But if we look at our younger people, they have a different idea about all these things that we get so excited about and we're so concerned about. They, not necessarily do they have a greater understanding, but it seems like they're more comfortable with it. And I think that's not only because they've been exposed to it all their lives in the media and in entertainment, but also it's because there is probably some kind of an evolutionary change happening. Now, we do know that if you are a spiritual person, and I don't necessarily mean religious, but spiritual, and you work to be more spiritual, you try to be open and loving, and you do some spiritual practices like meditation or go to church or things of that nature that raise you, then you are raised. And you could say that your vibrations are raising you.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there are changes. I can't for sure say that I am more evolved or that my vibrations are changing, but I like to think so, and I think there are people who can say that.
I can introspect enough to know that I went through a huge change not too long ago. Do you see that in experiencers?
Absolutely. Like I said before, in about the last 10, 12 years, we have seen fewer physical abductions and contacts and more what we call a spiritual or psychic. And many, many experiences, and I talk about this in that chapter in the book, how do people's lives change when they have ET contact? It's very interesting because there have been surveys done where people have actually been asked, how has your life changed? And some of that is in the book. And we definitely see changes. It's quite common these days for experiencers to report that they were taken aboard a craft, or they interacted with extraterrestrials in a location that was not in their home, and they were given information. Perhaps they were shown a video of the Earth and told, "You need to take care of this."
Yes.
This is your home, and you need to, you know, if you don't take care of it, there's going to be deep trouble. And people do come back, and sometimes they come back and they change careers.
Uh-huh.
This has happened. People come back and they feel so different. They're like, wow, I want to study ecology now, or I want to be in medicine. I want to do something more with my life, or I want to just go and travel the world and enjoy nature.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, big changes can happen.
I've heard that myself from individuals who I've been contacted with, that their lives had changed for the better Even though they're dealing with the experience itself or experiences over time, that their life has changed and they've had certain abilities come to bear where they can be more sensitive to people, empathic, and other things that happen. They open themselves up more. So it's an exciting time to be alive, seeing all these changes and having, you know, the government finally make reference to things that we've been seeing for years and centuries.
Yes.
So I'm glad to hear and see all of that. You know, what are you doing for your future? What are you, you know, are you thinking about another book, or, you know, like, are you going to be somewhere else besides the MUFON? What about your future, your business future?
Well, at this time, I'm really not making a lot of set plans because, I will be retiring soon from my other career, and so I'll see what I want to do then. But as far as writing a book, I think I have another one in me. The problem is it's just not ready to come out yet, so it may not. I've thought about doing a calendar.
Oh.
I've thought about doing other things. A few years ago, an associate of mine and I talked seriously about doing classes in experiencer therapy. Whether this is the time now, maybe the time for that is past, but that's a possibility. Huh. Is teaching hypnotherapists and counselors about the ET phenomenon, human ET contact phenomenon, and helping them to know how to help other people. So that's a possibility. I don't know. I'm not really sure. I have this new position at the ERT, which is director, and that requires a lot of things, a lot of duties, things that I'm just learning about and getting accustomed to doing. So that's taking a bit of my time. And so we'll kind of see. I have been wondering when disclosure happens, you know, what will we be doing? Will we be asked to serve? Will we be needed because to work with the people who are having issues with it? Or will everybody just understand it and everything will be accepted and then there won't be any need for MUFON or the ERT anymore? I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't see that that's going to happen anytime soon. So I'll probably be involved in the ERT for quite a while, yes.
Oh, great. I'm glad to hear, because I have a feeling that things are going to heat up. And we're going to hear more and more as people accept experiencers. We'll hear people, experiencers, be more open about it. And the media will, you know, bring experiencers in and talk, let them talk about their experiences. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Have you gotten any similar purposes why these aliens are here abducting us? Is there like a common theme, like, oh, well, I had, you know, 75% of them said they're here studying us, or they're just kind of pervos, and or just they're lonely, or you know what I mean? Is there a common theme in a lot of these?
Yes. There are, over all of the contact experiences that are reported, there are many, many similarities.
Huh.
And however, no two are exactly alike, because no two human beings are exactly alike. And we all, every experiencer, processes their experience their own way, through their own perceptions, through their own emotions, through their own spiritual setup. And so they're never, never the same. But there are some ones that, you know, you've probably heard about. There are some theories. I talk about these in the book. Some of them are well known. Some of them are not as well known. But some of them would be, there's something called the slave race theory. This is a theory that way back during the time of the Anunnaki, which was, you know, back in ancient times, that they came, ETs came, because they wanted to use humans for slaves.
Right.
There is a theory that they came to the earth, as the Anunnaki did, to mine gold, and that they found native humans here, or an early human man here, and altered us genetically and physically, probably also intellectually, so that they could make slaves out of us. And so that's one of the theories. And that theory continues to this day. Many people still believe that they are being used and that some humans are being used to do the bidding of extraterrestrials. That's one of the theories. There's one called what I call the alien arc theory. This is one where beings were traveling through the galaxy and they either decided to stop off on Earth or they crashed here and they had to stay here and they couldn't leave. And so they interacted with, again, early man, early humanity, and we are the result today. So that's one too, is they just accidentally happened to get here. And then we talked a little bit before about the lab rat thing, the lab rat theory, that they're here to use us for whatever purposes they have. Some people say it's time travel. It's all about time travel. The ETs are here from the future, and they are actually our descendants from the future. That's likely. It's more and more we're finding things that are happening that one's looking pretty good. There are all other kinds. The ascension, that they're here to help us ascend, that this is a galactic penal colony, and that the souls of people are sent to live on the Earth, people who have done something wrong in another planet or in another area of the universe, they're sent here.
That would be Johnny.
Yeah. Totally me.
Yeah, that would be horrible, but some people believe that. Then there's the fallen angel theory. You know, in the Bible it talks about the Nephilim.
Right.
And there's Lucifer, who was the fallen angel, and his people, his descendants. And so maybe that's who the ETs are. I mean, it is just, there are many, many interesting ones that I have put here. I think I have about 10 or 11
wow.
of them.
Wow.
So it's pretty much all over the place. And unfortunately, nobody knows which is really the real one, although I suspect they're probably different ones.
Yeah, a little bit of some, all of them.
mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think it depends on the race. It depends on the race that's here or the group that's here,
right.
why they're doing what they're doing. Some come to the Earth and they never have anything to do with humans, but these are the ones that we often are reported as USOs,
mm-hmm.
unidentified submerged objects. They're there, but they're in the ocean. Or they're in gigantic lakes, like the Great Lakes.
Right.
Or places where we don't go, you know, where we don't explore the depths of them. And they're here to perhaps sample our water, sample our animal life, see what it's like in our oceans. So we may never even see those, except we might get lucky enough to see one go into the ocean or come out of the ocean. But there aren't very many real interactions with those kinds of beings.
I used to sail off the coast of California my entire youth and teenage and young adult with my parents. We used to go back and forth, Catalina, Santa Barbara Islands, etc. And we often saw craft going in and out of the water. And it was usually on the most northern side of Catalina Island, and I used to scuba dive there when I got older because they have a sanctuary there for fish and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And my father had an experience where he and my mother were in the Santa Barbara Isle on the back side of the island. And a craft was right underneath their sailboat when they moored in a small bay. No one else was around. And these lights would, like, go into different colors and then patterns, like a communication with my parents. And my father was an aerospace engineer, and he wrote about that experience. He thought it was awesome. My mom freaked out and said, "We are leaving."
Yeah.
So I grew up with this. I grew up with the fact that I absolutely knew that there was underwater, submerged city or some kind of individuals there. I didn't think of them as alien, though. I thought of them more like a different species or someone different as I was young. And then as I got older, I realized people put labels, you know, as an alien. And I just thought that was always fascinating. So I do believe you're right. There are species that live on this planet and probably have since the beginning of human race as we know it.
Yes.
And
I agree.
Yeah.
There are reported undersea bases in many different places around the world. There's one that's very well known now, just off the Malibu coast in California.
Right.
And that is one that some people believe that it is a UFO base. Others just say that it's a natural formation on the bottom of the ocean. But that's one also that I talked about in the book, and all kinds of unusual, interesting things about the oceans. I think the USOs, even though they've been around forever, we know that there was a sighting that was reported in by Christopher Columbus.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they have been reported, but they're not the kind that are as well known, publicly known, because they're just not that much, you know, people just don't write about them that much. But that's one of my most fascinating things about, that I enjoy the most about this phenomenon, is the actual, the USOs parts.
Me too, me too. I know there's a very active one in San Diego. And when I was in the military, we'd have SEALs, U.S. Navy SEALs being trained out there, and they'd say, oh, you would not believe what I saw down there. So, yeah. And the ships get surrounded by colored lights and orbs and things like that all the time. The Navy knew about this like 40 years ago when I was active in it. So 50 years, I don't know, gee whiz.
Yeah, if you look into the literature, and I just have a short chapter on it in my book that covers quite a few things, but if you look into the literature of USOs, you're going to be, it just blows your mind.
Yeah.
How long they've been with us, and how, where people see them, and so much of it is the military. I mean, we're hearing about the military now, but a lot of this stuff has been going on with Navy ships forever.
They'd all talk about it in hushed tones in the 70s. Nobody wanted to say anything out loud. That's really a shame. But now they're coming out of the woodwork. They're saying, I had an experience, darn it, and so did my pal.
Well, it isn't, like you said earlier, it is an interesting time.
It really is. It's a great time to be doing all this. And I really look forward to working with you with MUFON and ERT in the future. And I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm very, very happy to be asked, and it's been fun today.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you'd like to learn more about our topics today, our guests, our past episodes, if you want to buy some merch or just yell at us for being tinfoil hat wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.